This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, everyone. This is Tracy Schoester, and today I'll be reading from the March-April 2024 issue and online articles for Good Housekeeping for Friday, April 26th, 2024. Articles that we'll hear for today include Motivating with Positivity for Your Pets, How to Easily Make Compost at Home, and Scientists Say Grandma Brain Isn't Just in Your Head. Enjoy. First up, the last article from the March-April 2024 issue. Motivate with Positivity. Experts explain why punishing pets doesn't work, and why a gentler training approach can be the key to success. If your dog jumps on visitors, chews your shoes instead of their toys, or noses through the trash, resist the urge to scold or grab them, say experts. You might feel better by yelling at the dog or doing something to stop that behavior that you dislike, but stopping a behavior does not show what you want your learner to do instead, explains professional dog trainer and author Melissa McHugh McGrath. Punishment only suits the punisher. Instead, teach them an alternate skill. Working with them also builds your bond, so you and your dog will become a team, working toward the same calm household. Like all mammals, dogs are always looking for more of the things they enjoy, like tasty food and attention from their people, notes certified behavior consultant Mikkel Becker, lead animal trainer for Fear-Free Pets. The trick is to teach them at a rate that lets them be successful and keeps them from getting frustrated or giving up or feeling confused, she says. Moving at their pace, setting them up for success, and making the reward more enticing than the undesirable behavior are all important. First, make sure your home environment isn't accidentally reinforcing your dog's problematic behaviors. For example, putting the trash can where they can't get to it or using one that locks will help them avoid being tempted to go through the trash. If your puppy potties on the living room carpet when left alone, keeping them close to you or in an enclosure on an uncarpeted area can help them while they learn more appropriate places to go. And make sure everyone in your household is on board. Any time that another person is still reinforcing unwanted behaviors or we're allowing that unwanted behavior, it makes it all the more challenging to address and to really make a change. Unwanted behaviors are often a result of a dog's trying to satisfy their needs. That's why it's crucial to not only redirect them to what you want them to do, but also think about why they're misbehaving. Dogs will often act out to get your attention if you engage with them only when they're doing something you don't like. So, to show them they don't have to eat your shoes to get noticed, make sure you praise them when you're lying down quietly or playing with their toys independently. Also, replacing regular feeding bowls with feeding puzzles at mealtimes can help a dog express their natural instinct to scavenge for food. When trying to teach a dog to go potty outside, make a big deal of it when they do, but then don't call them back inside or end the walk right away. If you do that, it can teach your dog that right after they go, the fun ends. Some dogs will actually learn to hold it to extend their time outside. Rome wasn't built in a day, and good behavior won't be either. Shifting your thinking to the long term can help prevent frustration if it takes your pet some time to learn what you want. Becker suggests thinking of training as a lifestyle shift and integrating short sessions into your day. Maybe you practice sit, stay, and down while you're reheating something in the microwave or for the length of a commercial break on TV. Short sessions work best because dogs lose focus and become frustrated after more than 5 minutes or so, Becker says, and a frustrated or bored dog won't learn well. McHugh McGrath advises her clients to think about the four D's that can impact training success: distance, duration, distractions, and difficulty. If your dog is learning to focus amid distractions, make sure that you're close to them and that any distraction is far enough away that your dog can focus on you. Keep the duration of your training short and make sure you're not starting at a higher difficulty level than they can handle or moving on to a new challenge before they've mastered the fundamentals. There's a fifth D, and it's drugs, McHugh McGrath adds. If we can't make enough serotonin, then store-bought is fine, and that goes for our dogs as well. Some dogs have anxiety or other medical issues that can contribute to unwanted behavior. So always check with your veterinarian to be sure there's not a physical barrier to their living their best, most behaved life. Our next article, how to easily make compost at home. It can be done quickly and isn't as hard as you think. Composting not only reduces trash in landfills, but it also improves your backyard at home. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, compost is organic material that can be added to soil to help plants grow. That means bigger produce, prettier flowers, and a healthier garden can come at no extra cost to you once you start saving your family's scraps and turning them into plant food. Follow our guide to composting so you can help improve the planet and your own home garden while reducing the amount of garbage you throw away. Experts from the Good Housekeeping Institute share their tips and tricks for making composting work no matter where you live. Why should I compost? Composting is an effective way to minimize the amount of garbage your family sends to the landfill. Not only does this reduce the methane gas produced by landfills, which is a major factor in global warming, but it can also help control trash can odor in your home. And the biggest payoff? You'll be left with a rich fertilizer you can use in your own garden or donate to your favorite cause. What can I compost? Food scrap and yard waste may be the largest percent of your compost material. You can include a lot of items from your kitchen and garden, but other household items like newspaper and hair are also fine to add to the mix. Food. You can use fruit and vegetable peels and scrap, mushroom scraps, eggshells, bread, grains, and pasta, coffee grounds and some coffee filters, loose teas and tea bags. Yard waste, you can use grass, leaves, wood ash, and sawdust. And other materials to use? Newspaper, cardboard, dryer lint, hair, nail clippings, brown paper bags, toothpicks, matches, and cut flowers. What can I not compost? While they are biodegradable, dairy or animal products, even animal bones, will start to smell and attract pests, so toss those in your old school garbage can. The same goes for fats, oils, and pet waste. Also, if you have a disease or insect-ridden plant, don't add it to the pile. It could contaminate your compost, making it unusable. Foods that you can't include: meat or animal bones, dairy, egg whites or yolks. Yard waste not to include: diseased leaves or plants and coal ash. And other things: grease, chemicals, pet waste, produce stickers, plastic, fats and oils. How can I compost outside? If you want to compost in your backyard, learn the do's and don'ts to set yourself up for success. Selene Rosoglou, a research assistant at the New Jersey Agricultural Experiment Station in New Brunswick, New Jersey, shared her helpful tips on how to manage your organic waste. 1. Create a compost zone. If you plan to use a compost bin, make sure it's convenient to access and that there is room for a lid to open. She says it's fine to use any sealable containers for both indoor and outdoor compost storage. For indoor compost, containers with lids that twist shut have worked well in my experience, she says. They are easy to open and close while also keeping the scent contained. If you want to start a compost pile, choose an open area. You need at least 3 square feet of space, and scatter some twigs or straw to ensure aeration and drainage. Use chicken wire or fencing to protect your pile from animals such as raccoons or even the neighbor's dog. 2. Balance green and brown materials. Whether you opt for a bin or a pile, she says a helpful ratio for compost composition is roughly 2/3 brown matter, sticks, dry leaves, or dirt, and 1/3 green matter, food scraps, or fresh plant waste. Maintaining a balance is important because brown materials are rich in carbon, feeding the organisms that break down the scraps, and green materials supply nitrogen, key for building the cell structure of your new soil. As a general rule of thumb, I like to add enough brown matter to fully cover the food scraps, she says. I use a shovel to mix the materials together, chopping down any of the more bulky food scraps like melon peels. After mixing, I add a thin layer of brown matter on top. 3. Manage the moisture. If your pile doesn't receive enough rain, you will need to add water with a watering can or hose. You could also opt to add wet scraps when moisture is needed. You're going for damp, not soaking. If you live in a very rainy area, keep the pile covered. A loose tarp is fine, so it doesn't get too wet, which can cause rot and destroy helpful microorganisms. 4. Turn your compost. Your compost also needs oxygen. Without air, your pile will start to rot and smell, so you'll need to rotate and stir the pile. With the right mixture of scrap, moisture, and air, your compost should smell like nothing but earthy dirt. For manual mixing, use a pitchfork. You'll ideally turn the scraps every 2 to 4 weeks. If you're using a bin, you could opt for a tumbler, which spins to mix the compost. Some also include an internal rail that breaks up the compost to help with aeration. With a tumbling bin, follow the manufacturer's recommendation. Most suggest spinning your bin every 2 to 3 days. When turning the compost, check for heat. The center of your pile or bin should feel warm. You want to maintain an internal temperature of 130 to 150 degrees. When the compost is ready, it will stop generating heat and look uniform and crumbly like soil. How can I compost inside? Whether you're in an apartment or a house without a backyard, you can set up a mini collection station right in your kitchen so you don't have to trash food scraps. See below for a step-by-step guide from the experts at the Good Housekeeping Institute. 1. Get a compost bin with a tight-fitting lid. Whether you opt for a plastic bin or a stainless steel version, make sure it comes with a lid. Some plastic versions may absorb smells, explains Laurie Jennings, GH Institute director, which is why she uses an old stainless steel ice bucket with a matching lid on her countertop to collect compostable material. 2. Line your compost bin with biodegradable bags. While it's tempting to want to reuse plastic bags from the grocery store, these aren't biodegradable and can defeat the purpose of your composting. Jennings swears by BioBags compostable bags available in 3 and 13-gallon sizes, even after trying a number of more expensive brands. 3. Store full compost bags in your freezer. You'll want to replace the bags regularly so weeks-old scraps don't start to stink up your space. Once your bin is at capacity, secure the bag and place it in the freezer. Yes, really. This will make scraps easier to transport, eliminate any odor, halt active decomposition, and buy you some time if you can't immediately get rid of them. And 4. Find a local collection service or drop-off location. If you don't have a garden in which to compost your scraps, see if your community offers collection services. Contact your local municipality or visit Compost Now's site, which lists participating services around the country. Some even provide a home starter kit and regular curbside pickup. The rules all depend on where you live. If you bring your own waste to a transfer station, check with them too. Many have designated compost areas. If you live in an apartment or in a city without collection, you likely have to put in a little extra effort to donate your compost, but it's worth it, explains Benur Aral, PhD, director of the Health, Beauty, and Environmental Sciences Lab, who is a home composter in a community that doesn't have a collection program. Every few weeks, I bring my scraps to my daughter's college, where they have built a composting bin. In the summer, I bring bags to my local farmer's market and give them to a neighbor who sells produce and uses the compost at her farm upstate. It's a little way to give back. How can I use my compost? Incorporate it into your garden beds or sprinkle it on top. Remember, compost is not a replacement for your soil, but rather acts as a natural fertilizer to nurture your soil and plants. So add it a couple of times a year for best results. Next up, scientists say grandma brain isn't just in your head. MRIs reveal that grandmothers may feel more emotional empathy toward their grandkids than they did with their own kids. My son-in-law recently introduced me to his friend the following way. This is Kate. She's an interesting person and a good conversationalist, unless Anne is in the room. In that case, don't even try. Anne is my toddler-aged granddaughter, and I am guilty as charged. Something happens to me when I'm with her. I'm enchanted, bewitched, besotted. It turns out that this isn't just love, though there's plenty of that. I'm experiencing grandma brain. That's not a technical term, but there is a scientific explanation for what's going on. Neurological research has shown that something unique happens to our brains when we see our grandchildren, and it may explain our intense devotion and delight. Dr. James Rilling, a professor in Emory's Department of Anthropology and Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Emory University, scanned the brains of 50 grandmothers while showing them photos of their grandchildren. The study didn't include grandfathers. What he discovered was brain activity that, at least in part, explains the intense grand-maternal bond. What really jumps out in the data is the activation in areas of the brain associated with emotional empathy, he says. That suggests that grandmothers are geared towards feeling what their grandchildren are feeling when they interact with them. If their grandchild is smiling, they're feeling the child's joy. And if their grandchild is crying, they're feeling the child's pain and distress. Retired teacher Janet Meisel, who has three grandsons, wrote an essay on Medium with a title that's a near-perfect illustration of the heightened emotional empathy that Rilling's study revealed. Titled, Are Grandparents Supposed to Feel This Much Love? Her subtitle reads, Sometimes it feels like my heart will burst with joy, and sometimes with pain. Reflecting on the difference between being a mom and a grandma, Meisel writes, I have given my children so much of myself, but this feeling was different. It was love on steroids. What makes the new research particularly interesting is that the grandmother's brains did not light up in the same areas when women looked at pictures of their own children. When photos of their offspring were shown to the same women, a different area was activated, one associated with cognitive empathy. With cognitive empathy, a person can understand what another is feeling and why, but with emotional empathy, a person experiences what someone else is feeling. That's no surprise to Nancy Claus, a Connecticut grandmother of two. It's like a melting, she says, sighing. Isabella's just at this magical stage where you hold her. She looks into your eyes, locks on you, and just bursts into this smile. She's just wiggling with happiness all over, and then I feel so happy, just flooded with this warm, delightful feeling. Grandparents tend to joke, if I'd known how great it would be to be a grandparent, I'd have done it before I had kids. This sentiment has less to do with brain activity than it does with the relationship. I can enjoy the kid and then hand them back. Grandparents, of course, have less responsibility than parents. Combine that with heightened emotional empathy swirling around in their brains and a don't-sweat-the-small-stuff sensibility of many older folks, and it makes for a joyful ride. I could have a terrible day or a wonderful day, but as soon as I walk into the room with my grandson or my granddaughter, anything that happened before just dissipates, says Melanie Schaffrin, a New York grandmother. I'm in complete rapture. Not to say I'm not aware of the mess being created, but it doesn't matter. For mothers and fathers, mess does matter. Parents are often up to their ears in work stress, financial stress, kid stress, elder care stress, and everything else pulling on them at the stage of life when kids are young. I don't even remember that life, says Marty Gallardo, a Texas grandmother of three with two more on the way. We were just so busy. Gallardo, now retired from her career in advertising sales, chatted while covered in green apple peel spit. She was watching her 14-month-old granddaughter, Claire, who only likes the inside of apples. As a grandma and a woman who no longer has to rush to work looking professional nor worry about if the baby is eating the right foods, Gallardo was relaxed. Reiling's original research was conducted in 2021. His study included placing 50 grandmothers in MRI machines and observing their reactions to photos of grandchildren who ranged from ages 3 to 12. The women were also shown photos of their own biological children as adults, as well as pictures of unknown people of all ages. The data is still being analyzed. Currently, Reiling is studying saliva samples to see whether grandmothers have more oxytocin, nicknamed the love hormone, for the good feeling it produces, compared to women of the same age who are not grandmothers. His team is also exploring if being a grandmother affects the rate at which the brain ages, with the hypothesis that it slows the process. He also hopes to conduct longitudinal studies by taking brain images and studying hormones before and after women become grandmothers. Reiling also plans to study the brains of grandfathers. The biology of grandparents is unexplored territory, Reiling says. A lot of research on older people's brains is in the context of pathology and degeneration. Here, we're looking at healthy older brains and what they may have been designed for. He believes his is the first study to examine grandmothers' brain activity. That said, other non-neurological studies have made the connection between being an active grandparent and better health. AARP conducted a comprehensive survey of grandparents and in its summary refers to grandkids as the elixir of life. Benefits include a more physically active lifestyle, more sociability, and improved mental well-being. The Berlin Aging Study, which tracked health outcomes of more than 500 people ages 70 and older, found that grandparents who helped care for their grandchildren had lower mortality rates over a 20-year period than those who did not. Plenty of research has also documented the benefits of grandchildren of having grandparents in their lives. Why have grandmothers' brains evolved as they have? As an anthropologist as well as a psychologist, Reiling speculates that close grandmaternal bonds make it easier for parents to reproduce and continue the species. Or to put it in everyday terms, if parents have some help with the first baby, they're more likely to go for number two or three. That may explain another facet of intense grandmother love, the recognition of past, present, and future in a grandchild's face. I see little bits of my mother in Olivia already, Klaus says of her two-year-old granddaughter. I don't want to burst into singing Circle of Life here, but it's seeing your genes passing on and moving to the future. Seeing the next generation, the continuity, just brings a contentment. And our last article for today, we have a few minutes left, so hopefully we'll make it all the way through. It's that time of year, so this article should be perfect. How to make a homemade fly trap with apple cider vinegar. These do-it-yourself fly traps took us less than 5 minutes to make. Whether it's fruit flies lingering in the kitchen or house flies buzzing in your ears, there's nothing worse than pesky insects inside your home. But flies can also be a nuisance outdoors, like during a barbecue or outdoor dinner party. If you're looking for an inexpensive and effective way to catch these insects, a homemade fly trap is a clever solution. Here we've tried three different methods to lure and trap flies indoors or outdoors. We chose apple cider vinegar as the bait, but use whatever you have on hand. Luckily, flies are attracted to anything sweet. Old wine, sugar water, ripe fruit, honey, or syrup are some of the best bait for a homemade trap. You'll also need dish soap, which helps drown the flies in the liquid. If you're trying to get rid of gnats, large flies, or even wasps in the garden, learn how to make these homemade traps. When you're finished, place the fly trap where you most often see bugs, whether it's near the kitchen, around houseplants, or in the backyard. Here's the first one. Make a homemade fly trap out of a soda bottle. Once you finish a soda, turn the bottle into an effective fly trap. The goal? Flies smell the bait and fly into the bottle to get to it. Once inside, they won't be able to fly up the narrow opening and will eventually die off. Here's what you need to do. Remove the bottle cap and label from a water or soda bottle, preferably one with a narrow opening. Use scissors to cut the bottle in half. Fill the bottom with apple cider vinegar, leaving a gap between the funnel and liquid. Tip, if you don't have apple cider vinegar, try honey, ripe fruit, or sugar water. Add a few drops of dish soap. Position the top half upside down inside the bottom so it looks like a funnel. As long as the problem persists, empty out dead flies and add fresh bait regularly. Here's how to make a homemade fly trap out of plastic wrap. With a few household items, you can recreate this discreet fly trap, which is best for gnats and fruit flies. You'll need to poke small holes into the plastic wrap using a fork or knife, but make sure the holes aren't too small for the kind of flies you're trying to trap. Here's what you need to do. Pour apple cider vinegar into a small glass. Cover the opening with plastic wrap and secure it with a rubber band, and poke a few small holes in the plastic wrap, which will allow flies to enter. Here's how you can make a homemade fly trap out of a paper cone. For this simple fly trap, you should have everything you need lying around the house. Gather a large mason jar or glass, a piece of paper, and bait, and then follow these steps. Pour apple cider vinegar into a large mason jar. Add a chunk of very ripe fruit, like an apple, peach, or banana. They all work well. Roll a piece of printer paper into a cone and stick it into the jar, placing the narrow opening down. What bait works best for a homemade trap? The best homemade fly trap is one that can attract both house flies and fruit flies. To lure both outdoors, mix scraps of rotting meat like fish or chicken with sugar or honey. When indoors, the best bait is old fruit or honey. Liquid dish soap is exactly what you need to drown the flies. Sugar and vinegar attract them, while the soap breaks down the surface tension of the liquid to trap the flies instead of keeping them sitting on the surface. And why are flies attracted to my home? According to the Ehrlich Pest Control, flies are attracted to the heat in our homes. They also love light, garbage, and damaged food. Warm and cluttered spots are their preferred breeding area, so it's recommended to remove garbage at least twice a week. Other helpful solutions include cleaning out drains and not allowing trash bins to overflow. Flies also hate the smell of cinnamon and essential oils, such as lavender and lemongrass. Light candles with those scents in places you want to keep the flies away. Well, that's all the time that we have for today. Thanks for joining me as I read from the March-April 2024 issue and online of Good Housekeeping for Friday, April 26th, 2024. Until next time, this is Tracy Shoster. Thanks, everyone, and have a great day today.